Our story really started in around 1936 when Germany recovered a flying disc. It is not clear whether they entered into an agreement with the aliens and were given the disc, or whether they took the disc, or whether the disc crashed and they just came in possession of it. The method by which they did this is not clear. It is clear, however, that they had a disc as early as 1936, that they were attempting to duplicate the technology in an area known as Peenemünde. When we went into that area after World War II, and captured Peenemünde, we found safes, file cabinets, drawers loaded with documents on the alien technology and on the attempts to reproduce the technology. We found pieces and portions of hardware. We found some of the scientists in our sweep trying to recover them. Many of them, however, were captured by the Russians. Much of the hardware was also captured by the Russians, and the Russians may have captured the original disc, because we certainly didn't get it, to my knowledge. Notice I say to my knowledge, because I was not privy to every scrap of information. When we found this at the close of World War II, we were extremely concerned. We didn't know what to do about it, but we immediately set the scientists about working on trying to duplicate the technology, or at least come up with it on our own. Most of it we did not have to duplicate until 1947, when, as you probably read or heard, or recently if you watched Unsolved Mysteries last Wednesday on television, you saw what was described as the Roswell incident. The Roswell incident is a true incident. It did occur. It occurred near the city of Roswell, New Mexico. And what actually happened, there was a thunderstorm. A disc was seen flying over two cities in the direction where the wreckage was found. The disc either exploded in the air or hit something in the air. But whatever happened, we know it happened in the air, because debris was found in two different locations. There were large amounts of small debris scattered over a ranch that belonged to a Mr. Brazel, who was an old-time cowboy. He was a very honest man and reported it. Several miles away, there was a large, intact majority of the saucer, actually, or the disc, found on the ground with several dead alien bodies. The reason I say several is there are accounts that there were four. I saw pictures of three of those dead alien bodies in a report called Project Grudge, which also included material from a report called Blue Book Report Number 13. So, I'm not sure whether there were three or four. I saw photographs of three of those bodies for sure. Really, it doesn't make any difference if there was one or 50. The important thing is that it occurred, and that there were dead alien bodies that were not of this world. The technology was not of this world. We could find nothing within that craft that we knew anything about. We could not find electrical wires. We could not find vacuum tubes. We could not find hydraulic actuators, accumulators, control valves. We didn't know what made this thing tick. Immediately, it was classified secret. It was carted away. The press was told, first, that they had recovered a flying saucer. Second, that no, it wasn't a flying saucer, it was a weather balloon. When the local newspaper tried to put it out on the wire service was interrupted, and a message came across the wire to the local news service stating that they were to cease transmission immediately. What they were transmitting concerned the national security. The message was from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And this is documented. The witnesses are still alive and have so testified to this fact. What happened over the next several years, really that's the most important thing that initially happened. The second most important thing that happened, and there were other crashes in between, the second most important thing that happened is that we found two disks in the vicinity of Aztec, New Mexico in 1948, which contained human body parts. Now, this caused the classification to go from secret to way above top secret, because there was a great fear of a national panic. Now, this was before they ever did a study to determine whether or not they believed the populace would panic if the information that aliens here were here was disseminated. But they knew that if they told the public, or if it got out to the public by some means, that aliens were not only here, but were flying around in craft which contained human body parts, that's another story altogether. Now, I don't want you to get real concerned about this, because your chances of being affected by it personally are extremely remote. The next really important occurrence was the fact that in 1949, again near Roswell, two disks crashed. They recovered five alien bodies from these disks, and in combing the area to make sure that they had recovered all of the wreckage and everything that they could so that the public would not be able to discover anything, and so that they would have everything with which to gain knowledge and technology from, they scoured the area by foot patrol, by jeep patrol, and by aircraft reconnaissance, and discovered an alien live from the crash wandering in the desert. They captured him. He was designated EB, extraterrestrial biological entity. EB was taken to Los Alamos, where he was placed in a Faraday-shielded environment. Because he had the ability to read the thoughts and transmit thoughts to people outside of where he was being held captive. He also had the ability, through a device that he wore around his waist, to literally walk through walls. Now, we know through our own study of science that this is not far-fetched. We know that mass, or matter, is made up of molecules, which are made up of atoms. And in between these atoms, there's quite a large space on that scale. And in between the molecules, there is a large space on that scale also. It's much like being out in space and looking at the solar system. If the sun and each of the planets, if you were to consider them to be molecules, if you could get way down microscopically and look inside your own hand, you would see much the same thing. There are large spaces between them. They're held together by a force or an energy, which we know very little about. With the proper technology, you could literally put your hand through your other hand if you knew how to do that. The aliens apparently do, because they can not only walk through walls, but they are apparently able to abduct you from your bed in the middle of the night and lift you out through your ceiling without opening any doors, without lifting the roof, without opening any windows, and you pass right through it with no ill effects, and they can put you right back down in your bed in the same manner. Now, this sounds totally insane, doesn't it? Doesn't it really? Because I have to tell you, quite frankly, when I was reading this material, and when I was studying the abductee reports, and when I first came across this, I thought it was crazy. I thought it was insane, until I realized that it was absolutely real. I want you to also bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that it was not too long ago, and it really wasn't too long ago, that if you mentioned to someone else that in a few years, man would be flying through our own atmosphere, you would have been laughed at, ostracized, and probably kicked out of town. Then not long after that, when we did have aircraft and were carrying passengers flew through the air, if you had suggested to your neighbor that in a few years a man would be walking on the moon, you would have been laughed at, ridiculed, and maybe run out of town. Literally, when we put a man on the moon is when I realized that nothing is impossible. Nothing ever again can be impossible. The next most important thing that happened after they found EB, that came a few years later, EB became ill and they tried to save him. They were unsuccessful, they didn't know how to go about it, but in an attempt to save him, and also in an attempt to gain favor with this technologically superior race, they began broadcasting out into space for help. We have one of your people here who crashed in one of your ships. We're trying to save his life. He's dying. Please help us save his life. By doing that, they hoped, number one, to make contact, number two, to make friendly contact, number three, that the aliens would see us as a benevolent people trying to help one of theirs and would not attempt to destroy us or hurt us. Because we realized that their technology was so far ahead of ours that in any military confrontation of any kind, we would have had no chance whatsoever. And basically, that is still true today. What should give you good feelings is that if the aliens wanted to, they could have done anything that they wished to us many, many years ago, and they have not done that. So I see that as good. Hopeful. I see it pregnant with all kinds of hope and possibilities for the future. Because we know as the human race, what we usually do to an inferior culture, if we're technologically superior, is usually not that good. So there is a great deal of hope. There's a great deal of promise in that. EB died in June of 1952. As of the time of EB's death, we had not had any answer to the message that we had sent out into space. The movie that you saw called E.T. is the story of EB. They have changed some things around to make it more palatable to you. The beginning of the story, he's running around in the desert. He's lost. The government is chasing him. In the real story, the government caught him. In the movie, the little boy gets him. And they form this symbiotic relationship. They're each getting something from the other. And it's a wonderful story. Well, in real life, the real life EB was assigned an Air Force officer to watch over him, become his friend, get as much information from him as he could, be his mentor, be his captor. And the same symbiotic relationship developed between EB and this Air Force officer to the point where when EB died, the Air Force officer cried. He was deeply hurt. He had lost a dear friend because he had been with EB literally night and day since they had found him. In the movie, EB gets very ill and everybody's very concerned. And the little boy plays the role of the Air Force officer. And you see that he cries. But in the film, he lives. E.T. Call Home was Project Sigma to attempt to make communications with the aliens to come and help save the life of EB. The government, ladies and gentlemen, is giving you information at an unprecedented rate every day. They are trying to get to your subconscious and tell you the story of what has happened over the last 44 years. So that when the truth comes out, it is not a critical shock. You will be prepared for it. You will understand what is happening. In 1953, we detected large objects in space coming toward the Earth. They took up a high orbit around the equator. These objects were determined to be spacecraft intelligently controlled. We did establish communications with them. Arrangements were made for them to land. There were three landings in 1954. One took place at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. One took place at Edwards Air Force Base in California. The other one, do not hold me to this because I cannot substantiate it, but I believe it was at Homestead Air Force Base in Florida. I believe that the aliens who contacted us, who were attempting to help us, who refused to give us technology, who wanted to help us with our spiritual development, I believe that that landing took place at Homestead Air Force Base in Florida. But I can't get any verification from that from any source, so don't put that down as fact. Put it down as a possibility. The other two bases, the other two landings, I know occurred without a doubt at Holloman Air Force Base and Edwards Air Force Base. The first landing occurred at Holloman Air Force Base, where the aliens met with our intelligence officers. They reached a basic agreement after several hours. They were able to communicate. They left one hostage with us. His name was Krill, as a pledge that they would return and formalize an agreement. Later in 1954, they landed again at Edwards Air Force Base. President Eisenhower had arranged to be on vacation in Palm Springs. At the appointed date and time, President Eisenhower was whisked away. He actually disappeared. Nobody even saw the helicopter come or go, but he just flat disappeared. The press was really shook up. And if you read the newspapers during that period of time, you will find that the press literally went wild trying to locate him. They were given a story that he was taken to a dentist for a toothache. They never found a dentist that treated President Eisenhower. In fact, he was at Edwards Air Force Base. He reached a formal agreement with the aliens and a treaty was signed. This was played out in a movie that you saw called Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Everything that you saw in that movie, except for finding the ship in the desert and the plains in Mexico and those types of things, was true. People were and are still being abducted. People were and are still being picked up and relocated, decontaminated, brainwashed, given new identities, and put back into society in some other location. It's for their own protection, really, in most cases. In some cases, it's a travesty of justice. People are being implanted. The implants were played out by the silly little tune that people got in their head. That represented the implants. They couldn't get this out of their head. They would have a close encounter with an alien disc, and they would hear this tune, and they could never, ever get rid of it. And it drove them to do some crazy things. And there are people today who are being driven to do some crazy things. I know some abductees who wake up one morning after they've had an abduction experience, and they've got to move. And they've got to move to a specific place in a specific state, and they've got to do it right now. And they don't know why. And they've never been there before. And they have no friends there. They don't even know what the place looks like, but they get all their kids. They pack up, and they leave, and they go to Sedona, Arizona. Some of them go to Yelm, Washington.